Program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenor Moudou, and welcome to Health Chat. On today's program, we will continue to look at the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. And today is an exclusive interview with our special guest, Dr. Malonga Myatudila. Dr. Myatudila is a public health consultant, Ebola expert, and former World Bank senior public health specialist. In 1976, Dr. Malonga was part of an international team that was sent to the Northern Democratic Republic of the Congo, then called Zaire, to identify and fight what was to become the first ever recorded outbreak of Ebola virus disease. After discussion, the team decided to name it Ebola, after the Ebola River, one of the region's streams. Dr. Malonga, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's so good to have you, given that you were there from the very beginning.
I was there indeed.
Okay, and we will have our conversation with Dr. Malonga in a second. Let me remind the listeners, if you would like to participate in the program, you can email us your thoughts or comment at facebook.com/healthchat, or you can call us at 202-361-3119. And we're going to have our discussion with Dr. Malonga in a moment, but first, VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with infectious disease expert Joel Solanke with the company Magpie, and talk about contact tracing, as this term has become very well known with the Ebola outbreak. Take a listen.
So what Magpie does is it recognizes that within global health, for example, during this Ebola outbreak, there's a lot of information that needs to be collected. I'm sure that your listeners and viewers have heard of contact tracing at this point, something I think very few Americans were aware of before the case in Dallas. The thing that has to happen in Dallas, besides treating that poor man with Ebola, is to track down everyone who might have come in contact with him. And when they track them down, they don't just sort of make a couple notes on a notepad. The CDC team that is working to track those people down develops a database. They have a form where they write down the person's name, the contact information, the symptoms that they may have, any other illnesses they might have or conditions, medications, et cetera, a whole variety of different pieces of information that have to be collected for each of those potential contacts so they can monitor changes over time. And unfortunately, in most cases, and I'm sure in almost every single case in West Africa right now, that same kind of contact tracing is, and other data collection activities is done on paper. Now, you can imagine with the unbelievably time is of the essence situation that we have with Ebola, that spending 3 days typing that information into a computer just isn't good enough. So contact tracing is one way in which we can dramatically improve the speed and efficiency of the response to Ebola. And what it means when you cut days or even weeks off the time required to do that contact tracing is that there are people who, with a paper system and all those delays, would get Ebola or who would not be identified or treated. Essentially, you can reach those people faster.
Looking at the countries where Ebola is hitting the hardest right now, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea,
yes.
What can these countries be doing right now with this technology that will help them, since the crisis is already there and it's spreading?
In all of those countries, there are all sorts of activities related to collection of information. Contact tracking, again, is one of them. I've been in conversations with numerous organizations and agencies, including some of the Red Cross organizations, for example, during the course of this week. For example, there are villages where an Ebola patient came out of. And what that means is that essentially everyone, maybe 200 people or 300 people in that village, they're all potential contacts. Now, there's no place to bring these people and put them in isolation, but somehow we want to be able to monitor the people in those villages to see if anyone develops symptoms. How can we do that at a distance? Well, if we can have basically self-reporting from the villages, where each of the villagers uses their own mobile phone or one that's accessible to them, to report when they develop symptoms so the authorities know about it and can then divert resources to finding that person and treating them appropriately, that works much better than, for example, if we have to say, we'll just every single week drive out to every single village in the country. First of all, weekly isn't enough. You want to immediately know when someone develops Ebola symptoms. But these are very far-flung villages in a very poor country with poor infrastructure and poor roads. So again, driving out to every single village to check every day to see if one of the many, many, many potential contacts is actually developing symptoms isn't going to fly.
Again, welcome to Health Chat. If you're joining us today, we're discussing Ebola. And our special guest is Dr. Malonga Miatudila. And as I mentioned earlier, in 1976, Dr. Malonga was part of the team that really, we can say, discovered Ebola. So, Dr. Malonga, before we get into your experience, which we really want to know about, can we have your reaction on what we just heard about contact tracing? It seems to be a critical part of fighting Ebola today. Did you do contact tracing back then in 1976?
Oh, yes, we did indeed, because you cannot win Ebola unless you do good contact tracing. That's very, very important. Now, how do you do that? That's where we differ with the strategy that they are using as of now. In 1976, what we did was to have, a three-tier type of strategy. So we have activities that were done at the local level, and then at the national level, and then at the international level. So we had these three levels. So contact tracing, we found, was best done if you empower communities to do that. You tell them to do that, instead of you coming from the capital city. Can you imagine this effort being done in Congo from Kinshasa? Mm-hmm. You go to the size of the country? No, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's possible even in what we call small countries like Liberia. Unless you do that at the village level, you are not going to be able to do the contact tracing, which is very, very important. Actually, an essential component of the fight against Ebola.
We've seen how it has worked in Nigeria. At least it has been one of the reasons, according to report, why Nigeria was able to contain it, because they've moved quickly with regards to contact tracing. Such a big country, it was very scary to hear that the virus was there. So,
yeah.
So then when we look at the way things are being done today, and looking back at 1976, what is so different with this outbreak? I'm just trying to understand, why is it so difficult to contain it? I mean, back then, you were part of the team. You did not even know what it was. You did not know how deadly, perhaps you knew. But I don't know if you had the suit, all the necessary equipment to deal with it. What is different this time around?
No, actually, this West Africa epidemic is not only different from the 1976, it's different from all the epidemics that occurred between 1976 and 2013.
How so?
We have had 25 outbreaks, mm-hmm. and all of them were contained in less than 3 months. So this is really different. So now, what is the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Two factors. Speed, the promptness of the reaction. This time, we waited more than 150 days to declare that we had a problem. That's one. And two, we are not following the classical, the strategies that we have been using in the last 28 years.
What strategy
so
is
speed
that?
And
strategy. Speed and strategy.
Yeah, these are the two things that explain the difference. Why we are now dealing with a special outbreak.
So we understand the speed. 125 days, of course, is a long time. The sooner, the better. What about the strategy? What is different?
Now the strategy is, as I was saying before, the main component or the main characteristic of the strategy, if you want to deal with an outbreak, you have to empower communities. I think that's even happening in Sierra Leone, Guinea, or Liberia, is that they wanted to do some. They wanted to do everything from the capital city.
Okay.
Instead of empowering communities, local communities, no, they decided to have a team going from Freetown, Monrovia, or Conakry to the countryside, and we have seen the reaction. So in Guinea, we have to unfortunately to witness the death of some people who were, let's say, considered as invaders mm-hmm. by local communities. So that was a mistake that we have been doing in this outbreak.
So, Dr. Malonga, when you said empowering local communities, what do you mean? I mean, the experts, if the experts are in this capital city, then they have to come from the capital cities. Or are you talking about different kind of empowerment?
Yeah, I'm talking about empowering. The empowerment needs to be done by people from the capital city. I call them the external people. But when you go into a community, you have to work through the local leaders, mm-hmm. be them imam, priests, pastors, or what we call witchcraft doctors, or anybody who has the confidence of the communities. You cannot go into a community directly and talk to the women, to the people in the community where they don't know you. You may come with all the credential. You can be the best epidemiologist. You can be, but if you are seen as somebody from outside, an external, your message will not be going to be accepted unless you work through the people who have the confidence of the people you are going to face.
Now, one of my questions is this. We've seen how much the virus has affected the medical community, the health workers, whether they were local health workers, nurses, doctors, or even international, those who come from organizations like MSF and other organizations. So I hear that it's because, I mean, some of the reasons I was told is because of the lack of resources and the doctors are not well trained. But when you send in doctors that are coming from other countries, Western countries, whether even African countries, because we have experts like you, and then these doctors go in and they are still infected. Not as long as Monday, we lost a doctor from Sierra Leone and many others have died. So when you guys went in and did not know much about this disease, how many casualties or how much of an impact did this virus had among the medical workers? And why is it so virulent among the medical workers today?
No, even in those days, 1976, most of the people died. I mean, we lost most of our health people. For instance, in Yambuku, we lost all the Belgian nurses who were working in the hospital.
Okay.
Why? Because Ebola is not very contagious, but if you are in contact with fluids from patients, mm-hmm. and that's the only way you can get this contact is by being a health professional, by caring for people like nurses or doctors. You make the slightest mistake, you get it. And once you get it, the chance for you to die chances are very high. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem why we are losing a lot of health personnel, because they are in close contact with the people. But if you are not in close contact with the people, with a sick person, the chance of you getting that the disease is quite low. It's far lower than getting a flu.
The flu, yeah. That's what I heard. But Dr. Malonga, when you look at the way things have progressed around the disease in terms of prevention and care, because when it comes to spreading, apparently it has gotten worse. But after all these years, what went wrong? Why don't we have a vaccine? Why don't we have a treatment? What went wrong? What is not happening here?
So this is a very interesting question that we have been posing to the international community, because we are dealing with a virus, meaning something that you can develop fast, you can easily develop a vaccine against a virus. We have seen we have seen the success in many viral diseases, and the technology is the same. Especially now that we have a virus that does not tend to mutate as easily as the AIDS virus. So technically, I think we have the technology to develop a vaccine. But what has lacked in the last 40 years is the willingness to do that. Because unfortunately, Ebola was considered as a disease of the order. That's a problem. Okay, as long as it was not threatening the powerful, there was no financial or commercial incentive to invest in the research. But I think now that it has become a pandemic, we are going to see some advances in the. My bet is that by mid June, we are going to have something efficient against Ebola virus.
By mid
June. So really, what was missing the willingness to do something about this disease.
Okay, Alan in Sierra Leone has a question for you. He says, dear doctor, given that you have so much experience with Ebola, is the international community using your expertise in this outbreak? I know right now you are here in the United States, but he wanted to know if the international community has used your expertise for this specific outbreak that seems to be so out of control.
I would say that if my friends from West Africa have just applied the recipe, because we have the recipe, and we have been also proposing our help to the, because I have some contacts in Freetown, I have contacts in Liberia, I have contacts in Guinea, and we are trying to push for the recipe, but unfortunately we have met a lot of
roadblocks,
a lot of resistance.
I know we want to be politically correct, so you might not want to go into too much details. But when you talk about recipe, what are you talking about? Treatment, prevention? What recipe are we talking about?
No, recipe is we have developed strategy.
Some strategies
with four pillars.
Okay.
The first one being early diagnosis.
Okay.
And the early diagnosis can be only done at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to wait for somebody coming from the capital to come in your village to make the diagnosis. So again, empowering local communities. Second is the provision of care to people who are sick. Third is communication, information and communication, using local languages, not using English or the Queen's English like I was seeing in some countries.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use local languages. Now, when we have many local languages, please don't use English. Use the language that people understand at the level of the village.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fourth was prevention of transmission. So you equip communities with knowledge how to avoid transmission. So things like safe burial or trying to limit the contact with sick people. So prevention of transmission. And then the fifth component, very, very important, you need to establish a coordinated team. I still have to see that in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
You go there, you will see that the country has been invaded by many types of teams. You have Cubans, you have Chinese, you have French, you have British, you have the Americans, you have the local, you have WHO, MSF, but you don't see a coordinated team. You see that you think that people are working side by side with no coordination at all. Hmm. And that is very, very important. Unless you coordinate, you are going to play a cacophony.
But Dr. Malonga, whose responsibility is it? You talked about roadblocks. First of all, where are you meeting these roadblocks? In the individual countries, or is it the international, the so-called international community? And then whose responsibility is it to coordinate this effort? Wouldn't that be the country itself?
The country should be at the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important. And we have been trying to push that at the national level, but we are still waiting to see that. That's the problem. So unless we have a maestro, unless we have somebody who can lead the orchestra, people are going to play cacophony.
I guess I find Alan's question very interesting because for me, here's an expert who has been there from the very beginning and knows very much about this disease and is, you know, is on my show. And I'm very honored that you're talking to me. You're in Maryland. You're here in the United States. And I just don't understand that you will meet any type of roadblocks when it comes to, you know, contributing to this outbreak, given how terrible it has been with all the people that have died and everything. But I guess that's just my opinion. I should keep it to myself. So let's look at now moving forward. OK, we've seen that Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone have been at the forefront of this outbreak. Some countries like Nigeria have been able to contain, Senegal. Now Mali is making effort to ensure that this the couple of cases that they had do not turn into, you know, a very serious outbreak and epidemic to some extent.
And Senegal also.
And yes, Senegal. Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here, Dr. Malonga?
Yeah, we have to change the way we are dealing with the problem. Unless we do that, we are not going to go anywhere. They just have to see, to look at what Nigeria has done. When Nigeria, when Port Harcourt was struck, you could see the local authorities talking, taking control of everything, putting everybody in a team to fight the disease. You can see that the Minister of Health in Port Harcourt was coordinating the efforts by CDC, WHO, MSF. Everybody was under one line of command. Mm-hmm. We are not seeing that. That's the problem. So that we can pull money. We can pull money, but it's not going to work unless we do what. Now, two or three days ago, I received a letter from my contacts in Liberia. They said that now they are moving toward decentralizing the treatment centers. Because, for instance, you have people who are sick somewhere, and then you have to send vehicles to get these people from the village to the capital to be treated. Mm-hmm. And then when they die, you don't see the body. Their body is cremated. How can you expect people to let their members of their family go there, especially if the case fatality rate is still high? So you are, and then sometimes people come to the center and there is no room. And I've been told, I was really appalled to hear that when somebody dies in a village, you have to to wait for a vehicle coming from the capital to come and take the body, and then can wait 3 to 4 days, and the body is laid, these are terrible ways of doing.
This case is also one example of what people have been talking about, the lack of resources, because if there is no ambulance, if there are not enough ambulances in the city to allocate one ambulance to the village, then they will have to wait. So that this perhaps boils down to the lack of resources as well, not necessarily the lack of will. What do you think?
Because no, you don't need an ambulance to bury somebody in a village. We didn't have a single ambulance in Yambuku. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a single ambulance in Kikwit or Isiro. Uh-huh. You don't need that. You just tell people to perform safe burial
practices.
And they can do that in the village. You don't need to bring these people in an ambulance from the village to the capital city. They are fortunate enough to have small countries. But what about Nigeria? Nigeria, if let's say we have said that, okay, people who die in Port Harcourt should be taken by ambulance to Lagos. Can you imagine what they've created?
Yes, I can see.
So
basically, it's about...
Resources should follow ideas, mm-hmm. and not the reverse. Okay. If you have false ideas and you are trying to build around these false ideas, of course your resources are going to be limited.
So basically, if what I get from what you are saying now is definitely there should be a localized approach to this. To fighting this outbreak, I mean, we cannot have a cookie-cutter approach to say, okay, this is it, and do this. Given that we're dealing with some rural areas, we're dealing with areas with no health medical facilities, no ambulances, so each community should have its own localized approach to match its reality or its, you know, whatever habits that they have.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the external community, by external I mean people from the capital city and people from outside the country, should come to support community activities. For instance, if they need something, for instance, they need clothes, then the international community should provide them with gloves. But we have seen in one village, I can't remember if it was Liberia or Nigeria, they didn't have gloves. But people, there was a nurse was so creative that she didn't wait to get gloves. She was using plastic, the plastic bags to protect herself against contamination,
yes.
And she was able to treat more than 20 patients without becoming sick.
Yes.
So people can become creative when you empower them. They sense some sort of responsibility. They can do miracles.
Absolutely, Dr. Malonga. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Malonga. Mia Tutdila.
Thank you for giving the opportunity to reach my countrymate in Africa. And
great.
I'm traveling by the end of this week, and I hope I'll be closer to them.
Great. And let me just mention that Dr. Malonga will also be on Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali tomorrow. So remember to tune in on TV and on radio, Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali, for the special on Ebola. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Lenor Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.